Hi, this is Craig Valentine, host of Early to Rise Radio. Have you ever wanted to become wealthier, healthier, wiser, or just have more time to appreciate the finer things in life? On this show, we reveal what high performers are doing every day to be more successful without sacrificing their personal lives. Early to Rise Radio is sponsored by the Perfect Day Formula. Get your free copy of this game-changing success guide at freeperfectdaybook.com. Now let's get started with today's show. Would you like to make more money for yourself, for your family, for your favorite charity, for the church that you go to that needs to raise money? Well, we're going to talk about copywriting today, something that you can do at home, even on your iPhone at the park. I used to write emails standing in a crowded subway car in Toronto on my BlackBerry that made me hundreds of dollars when I sent them out the next day. So copywriting, whether it's email copywriting, sales letters, it can change your life. And today's expert is back on the show for the second time. I'll introduce him to you in a second. I'm Craig Valentine, the host of Early to Rise Radio, and copywriting has set me free. Copywriting allowed me to sell 50,000 copies of my book, The Perfect Day Formula, which you can get a free copy of at freeperfectdaybook.com. And by reading that book, it will open up more time for you to write copy, just like it did for today's guest expert. His name is Justin Goff. He's one of the world's most famous copywriters. He has an amazing email newsletter that we'll tell you about at the end. He is a big fan of the Perfect Day Formula. He's been on the show before on episode number 123, and I brought him back today to help you make some side cash, get a second income, maybe even make this your full-time income, working at home in your underwear if you want. I usually wear shorts on top of my underwear when I write, but I'll tell you what, it set me free. All right, so let's jump in the show. We cover a huge range of topics, including how to write for the coronavirus crisis, how to update your offers to make more money, what we learned from our number one common mentor, and what he would do if he was just starting out again today. All right, let's go to the show. Awesome. Well, welcome back, Justin Goff. You were on episode 123. So, for everybody listening, I'd love for you to go back, listen to that. Justin is a great copywriter, as I mentioned in the intro. And my goodness, he writes one of the best daily emails that I'm on, and I'm on a couple. And so, Justin, welcome back to the Early to Rise Radio Show.
Thank you, man. This is the only podcast I've been invited back on, so this is a big deal.
There you go. That might say something about me, might say something about you. All right, listen, where are you holed up right now during this crisis?
I'm holed up at my house in Austin, Texas, man.
Yeah, did you get out of town at all? Or
no. Honestly, it hasn't changed that much for me because I'm kind of like you in the sense like I keep to myself pretty introverted. Yeah. I'm going to the dog park. I'm doing stuff like that, but like it honestly really hasn't changed that much for me. So, I mean, I know I'm one of the lucky ones because there are a lot of people obviously really hurt by this.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to, we are going to dive deep into that, including, ideas on where you and I might start if we were getting into copywriting as a second income, all that cool stuff. But I'm going to go, and I know we talked about Dan Kennedy last time, and I just had Russell Brunson on the show, and he shared his number one tip from Dan Kennedy. I'll share that in a second. And then I shared mine. So we want to start with like, what's yours or what's like a little known Kennedy thing that maybe you only remember that has really helped you in your career?
So I shared one like about 2 days ago with my email list that people hardly ever talk about, but Dan talks about. It's called the chain of belief. He's literally probably one of the only copywriters I've ever heard talk about this. Basically, so here's a good example. Let's say you're selling a product, teaching someone how to make money with e-commerce. A lot of people start at the point where they're like trying to convince them, here's how they can make six figures a year running an e-commerce business. But before you can get to that point, there's really about four or five things that you have to get them to believe before that. So like the first thing is you have to get them to believe that they need another income source. So they might have a job right now. It might not be great, or they might not be making as much money as they want. So you have to convince them that they need to make more money. That's step one. Step two would be that you need to convince them that e-com is the way to make more money, because in their mind, there's they're not just looking at e-com. Like they're looking, they're talking to their buddy who does MLM. They're talking to their buddy who's doing get rich in real estate stuff. They've seen ads for affiliate marketing. So then you need to convince them that e-com is the way. After you convince them that, a lot of people in this niche specifically, the idea of like, let's say making six figures a year with e-com is so far out of their worldview and so far out of their possibility. You have to get them to believe that that's even possible for anyone, not even just themselves. Like before you can convince them that they can do it, you have to get them to believe that. Cause like if you ask your average person who makes 35, 40 grand a year, they think the way you get rich is by winning the lottery or by inheriting money from your grandparents. Like,
yeah, you and I both grew up blue collar, you know, not really that far. You're in Ohio and I'm in Ontario. And for sure, man, like when we grew up $100,000 a year, like when I was in college, that was my, if I thought I made 100 grand a year, I thought I'm going to be so gold.
Yeah. I mean, my goal was 50,000 a year. I remember growing up thinking $50,000 a year was a lot of money. And I remember people that my parents hung out with that, for our small town had money who maybe made 100, 150, and them being talked about as like the rich people.
Yeah.
Which you get out into the big wide world and that's not really anything.
Yeah, exactly. You'll always find somebody richer. Now I'm going to come back to that chain of belief because I read that email the other day. I thought it was really great. The one that Russell shared, and I'm sure that you have used this in one of your past businesses, is that the person who can outspend the competition wins. How did you use that in your business? And where would you rate that in your Kennedyisms?
Honestly, that was one of the ones I was actually thinking of when you asked that question. Mm-hmm. That was a big eye opener for me. I remember when Dan said that, I can't remember when I actually learned it, when it like hit home, but yeah, he's basically talking about the more you can spend on whoever can spend the most money to acquire a customer ends up winning. This business probably around like 2014, it really, when I was scaling my supplement company, it really hit me that this business is all about customer acquisition. All the other stuff we talk about, matters, but first and foremost, it is about customer acquisition. And the more customers you can acquire, especially the specific types of customers you want, you're going to beat everyone in your niche. And the way to do that is by having a higher lifetime value of their customer. So someone like Agora Financial, who has a huge lifetime value, and they're able to go negative for 6 to 8 months to acquire customers. So they might spend $200 today to acquire a customer that they only make $100 on today, but over the course of 6 months, they're going to break even and then they're going to start profiting off that customer. That's an advantage that a lot of people can't even hang with because they simply don't have the money. And even if you have the money, then you got to have the balls and the confidence to be able to do it. And that's another thing that even people with the money don't want to do. So it's such a huge advantage being able to spend more to get a customer.
Yeah. And then I'm not sure if I shared this on the last one, but the biggest thing that I heard Kennedy say, and I never heard him say it anywhere else, was I was at one of his Independence, Ohio events, you know, beautiful, luxurious Independence, Ohio. And he said his greatest regret was when he found an offer that worked and he didn't spend as much money as he could have. So he didn't, I guess you could say, you wouldn't say greedy, but he had the opportunity to get more customers. And the reason why he said that is because at the start of all these events, he would make everybody stand up if you spent, you know, more than 10 grand with him, 50 grand, 100 grand. And he had a lot of people in the room still standing after 100 grand, maybe even after 200 grand. And he thought, okay, if I just had really tripled down, because he probably doubled down, but if he had tripled down on getting the maximum numbers of customers when, you know, things were going really well for him, then he would have more people in that room standing up at 200 grand. And I actually have been learning this recently in the coaching business, because I get so many people who sign up for coaching with me who are not trainers or gym owners, but are CEOs of big companies and fintech guys and all this sort of stuff, all these weird, not weird, but, you know, big high level people. And I thought, oh, they must have came in my world from the perfect day formula or early to rise. And I go, how did you hear about me first? And they go, well, we bought Turbulence Training back in 2008. And now they're paying $5,000 or $20,000 to get coaching. And I was like, oh man, I mean, I know I did everything I possibly could have back in the turbulence training days, but if I had only found a way to get double or triple the number of customers in that business, my coaching business would have been even easier. So I did eventually learn that and experience it as well. So it's something that sounds easy to do in hindsight, but it is not easy to do when you're there, right?
Yeah. I mean, it really comes down to when you have something that works, like riding that until you've squeezed all the juice out of it is the way to go. Cause this idea that like, oh, I'm going to take my time with it and we'll build up slowly. Now you do it. You have to in some ways, cause you got to catch up with customer service and merchant accounts, all that kind of shit. But like, if you have the ability to really scale something that's working, trying to like play a long game with it is a really, really dumb idea because things just don't last. I mean, the best offers aren't going to be around 5 years from now, especially if you wrote an offer that's really just kind of tied to, let's say, the current thinking or something kind of going on in the economy or the way things are in the world. They're not going to last. I mean, even the best offers have to be redone a couple times a year to keep them going.
Yeah, that's interesting. That leads into another thing that I learned from Kennedy, the seven words from Robert Collier. And I want you to talk about how important this is now and how someone might apply it. But it's enter the conversation in the prospect's mind. So how did you do that with Patriot Greens? And how would you recommend somebody does it today?
So, I mean, today, like, I did a call last week with Perry Belcher and my partner, Stefan Georgi. We kind of talked about marketing during the coronavirus stuff. And a lot of the smartest marketers have really changed all of their marketing around coronavirus. So a lot of the people in our Copy Accelerator group who are in the health niche are really pushing everything towards immunity angles because immunity stuff is just crushing right now. And it really doesn't matter what you're selling almost. It's like, how can I tie immunity in with this? Or how can I tie their current situation in with this? So like one of the things Stefan did, he rewrote a lead for one of his weight loss offers. And just a couple lines at the top of the lead, he tied in with like you being at home and you putting on weight because you're kind of like endlessly snacking and you're bored and you can't leave the house. And so just words of like things that are going on right now. I think last time I talked to him, they got like a 40% bump on their conversions just from this small little change that tapped into exactly what people are feeling right now. And I mean, you're seeing the same thing in really every niche. I mean, obviously certain niches are tailor-made for this. We have a bunch of people in survival who are in our thing and like, they can't keep anything in stock because everybody's just buying everything. But even like things you wouldn't think of, like people in health that we're working with who have sinus offers are like just going through the roof right now because there's some connection to breathing and respiratory stuff and stuff like that, which ties into coronavirus.
Which goes to show you that a huge lesson is that people are still buying stuff.
Oh yeah. The nice thing about running, obviously like downline stuff like us, I was a little worried at first cause like, oh man, all these people were coaching. Like, are they going to be taking a huge hit? And the reality is the majority of them, things are either the same or they're better. We have maybe a small, like 10% have kind of seen like a 20% dip. But other than that, almost everybody is doing just as well or better. And the main reason is ad costs have dropped drastically because all the big brand advertisers have really pulled out a lot of Facebook and YouTube and stuff like that. And then there's just more people on their phones and online than there normally would be. And people are bored and they're surfing the net and they're buying stuff.
Yeah. And good copy. Like now the people that haven't changed. Like I was talking to one of my clients and he was like, he had dropped his response in his webinar. And I said, well, how have you changed it? And he said, well, we haven't changed it. And like, obviously you got to change it. So what's different now in some marketing and what will it be like in the foreseeable future? So I am asking you to look into your crystal ball and maybe think about what will copywriting look like for when people reopen America and what should be and reopen the world and reopen commerce? What should the marketplace be thinking of then? And even some of these health offers, how should they pivot? And what would it be like writing copy for the greater depression if things got worse? You know, how would you deal with those things and adjust your copy?
Yeah, I mean, like, let's say the economy turns south and more people are struggling. Your average everyday person who's kind of buying the type of stuff we sell. A lot of the stuff that tends to work when the economy goes south is much more about instant gratification type stuff. So let's say you're selling a financial product. If you're selling a financial product talking about stashing money away for retirement that's 30 years from now, nobody really gives a shit about that in that situation. But if you could teach them how to make an extra $500 a week doing whatever it is online, maybe writing articles for a website or something, that's a very appealing offer. A couple of people like that we coach do biz op stuff. And from my conversations with them, like, they're crushing right now. And I think that's going to keep going for a while because obviously people are looking for income. You have a large majority of the country who got laid off or hours reduced or whatever. So I think that's going to keep going. As with every kind of recession, certain industries thrive and certain ones definitely slow down. So how can you kind of position what you're doing to fit what people are kind of needing right now? I mean, a lot of businesses have to make a real pivot. Other businesses can kind of just keep going business as usual. But that's kind of up to the business owner to really decide where you want to take things.
So I own a couple of gyms and, you know, they won't be able to open really, really soon, but when they do open and when Main Street USA opens and the flower shops open and all this stuff opens, what are some good copywriting ideas? What are some offers? What are some ways of getting the attention of people and overcoming the objection that's going to be in their head, which is, well, my neighbor died from this. I'm still not going out.
Yeah. That is going to be interesting. I don't know. I was actually talking about this with a couple of friends. Like, it's not going to be okay, everything's open and everything returns to normal. Like, that's wishful thinking. I mean, in terms of the gym, like, I think something very simple, like we talked about, the number of people that are at home right now eating and bored and stress eating, the amount of people who are going to gain weight during the coronavirus is going to be pretty astronomical, I bet. I mean, if I owned a gym, I'd be running some type of Corona 15, like, weight loss thing for the first 30 days when you're able to open up again. Mm-hmm. And really target those pain points of, like, you've been under stress for the last 2 months, just like I have. You've been eating chips and sitting on the couch and not moving as much as you normally are. We're all going to do this together. Like, we're going to get back in shape, blah, blah, blah. Just a little angle like that would probably connect with a lot of people, I bet.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So let's switch gears now. Let's talk about copywriting as a second income and an opportunity for somebody to get in the game. And you know what? Let's talk about the chain of belief. So somebody right now has, you know, spent their life in the corporate world. Maybe they worked their way up to like 75 grand, you know, something that was kind of comfortable. And now they're laid off. They get a little bit of money, but they're probably not going back to work, because companies are realizing, okay, we could probably have 10% or 20% less employees and be just fine. So they've heard about copywriting. And they've heard about copywriting, and now they hear about these guys making millions, and they're like, well, no, or they think that it takes a lot of work or something like that. So let's talk about the chain of belief, and then we'll go into some of your Copy Cub stories about how, you know, you've taught somebody to become a very successful email copywriter very quickly.
My biggest thing with learning copywriting is you have to start small. Everybody I know, I've talked to numerous people who train copywriters. I've talked to the people at Agora who, when they bring in their teams and they're training people straight off the street, they've tried it every which way. You have to start with small stuff. So whether that's Facebook ads, whether that's emails, whether that's writing like pre-sell advertorial pages, you have to learn in a smaller condensed form. Trying to learn how to write a 45 page sales letter when you don't know anything about copywriting, is like trying to walk out onto a baseball diamond and hit a 95 mile per hour fastball. It just doesn't matter how good you are, it's not going to work. So I'm a huge fan of starting. I picked emails for a lot of the people that I teach for a couple of reasons. Everybody's somewhat you're familiar with emails. I mean, everybody's got an email address. Everybody sends emails. They read email newsletters. Writing emails is a very condensed version of direct response. You're learning about things like headlines. You're learning about how to grab their attention. You're learning about how to tell an entertaining story, and you're learning about how to get them to take an action really quickly. And in my opinion, like, you can make good money writing emails. You can make $200 per email. You can make $300 per email. And you can even do performance bonuses and all kinds of crap like that. But starting small to me is the biggest kind of thing that, if you wanted to start out, that I recommend to everyone. Anytime somebody comes up to me and talks about writing sales letters, I push them straight away to starting on something a little smaller.
How does someone then go and get an email copywriting side gig? You know, so it's like, okay, so I've done the work, you know, I've studied a whole bunch of people writing email. Now what do I do? You know, because I don't know anybody. I live in Podunk, Idaho, or as Kennedy likes to say, Tupelo, Mississippi, you know. So what do I do? What do I do? Well, Tupelo, Mississippi is actually a big city. But, you know, you live somewhere, you don't know anybody. And yeah, okay, great. I can write some subject lines and an intro and a call to action. But now what?
Yeah, so I mean, there's really two ways I tend to recommend for copywriters getting clients. So the first one, and that I say all the time, is meeting them at live events. In this kind of environment, obviously live events are not going on. It's going to be a little harder. But once we come out of this, live events are going to kick back up. People are going to start going to them. When I was a freelance copywriter back in the day and looking for clients and on the hunt for clients, the majority of the clients I got were from being at a bar at 2 a.m. at Traffic and Conversion and meeting someone there and just shooting the shit. And all of a sudden they're like, oh yeah, we need help with this. And I'm like, okay. And I wound up writing copy for that person. The cool thing with getting clients is, like, getting the first one is the hardest one. Like anything, you got to get the first one, and then you get them kind of some results. Then you can just start asking them for referrals. But live events is probably my first one. My second one takes a little more grunt work. It works really, really well. It takes a little upfront work. Basically, I recommend to a lot of people, if you're following, let's say you're in the health niche, you want to write health copy. If you're following what people are doing in the health niche, write an email or write a lead for one of their offers and send it to them. Just email it to them right away. Because a lot of people take the opposite approach. Like, someone will email me and be like, hey, I want to write copy for you. I'll write it for free, blah, blah, blah. Well, I still have to make a decision and tell them what to do and all kinds of stuff. So it's not really a great offer to me. But if you email me right away and you're like, hey, here's this 2-page lead I wrote for your Patriot Power Greens offer. If you want to test it, feel free to go ahead and test it. And if it works, I'd love to talk to you a little bit more about writing for you. That's a killer offer. You just stood out from everybody else in my inbox and you took the initiative without me having to do anything.
Has it worked where people have taken a set of emails and rewritten them and sent that in? Because I've recommended that to a couple of people, but I've always wondered, like, is that showing up in a way that is going to almost insult the person who wrote the emails in the first place?
I mean, I've had people write email. I haven't had them rewrite emails, but I've had them write new emails. So let's say you do a ton of affiliate stuff and your emails burn out after 2 months, 3 months, whatever it is. Write them two or three new emails. I mean, I do this even for copywriters who are, like, pretty decent, who are making a couple grand a month. Uh-huh. I'll tell them, even when they're applying for jobs, like, if you don't have copy samples in that niche yet, so let's say you're writing for the pet niche and you don't have never done anything in the pet niche, write them two emails just so they have an idea of what your copy is going to look like on their products. Because otherwise the business owner has to read your copy that's about some other topic and try to imagine what it would look like on his products, which is, most people can't do that.
Got it. Well, you have done stuff in the pet niche, and we're going to come back to that in a second. But so let's say, knowing what you know now, and let's say you were actually employed as a copywriter, or you were employed as something else and you weren't a copywriter, and you got laid off and you were like, oh, I'm going to go and study copywriting. what would you do if you had just 90 minutes a day for the next 6 weeks? You knew you were going back to work, but you knew that, hey, listen, our business, our company that I work for is probably going downhill. I'll probably get, you know, a couple of months of work and then they'll probably lay me off again. And I don't want to go broke like I did this time, but I have 90 minutes a day because I got to homeschool my 8 kids and I got to do all these other things. What do I do for 90 minutes a day for the next 6 weeks before I go back to work?
I would spend 10 of those minutes. Let's say I want to do email. I would spend 10 of those minutes studying email copy. I would get on a bunch of different lists like Newsmax and Alternative Daily and stuff like that, that I know send out a lot of direct response offers. And I would study the copy that gets sent out for offers on those lists for 10 minutes. And the other 80 minutes I would spend writing emails. I mean, that's one of the things that people are always looking for a shortcut around that. To be a good copywriter, you have to write every single day. There's no way around that. And I actually tell people too, like, if you start doing this and I'm telling you to write for 90 minutes a day and you realize you hate it, you should not be a copywriter. Go learn like media buying, go learn something else. Because copywriting is all about writing and you need to write every single day. So if you don't enjoy the act of writing, find something that you actually do enjoy.
What do you think of the classic advice of handwriting proven sales letters from the past?
I honestly have no idea if it actually works. I've never actually done it myself. I have a gut feeling that the reason Gary Halbert came up with that idea is simply because when people asked him how to be a good copywriter, the real answer was not something they wanted to hear, which was write for 3 hours a day. And after 3 years, you'll be semi-decent, mediocre. And after 10 years, you'll be good. Yeah. Which is not really an answer anybody wants to hear. So
what was your trajectory? Like, it didn't take you 10 years, but you know, you cut that trajectory when you got David as your coach, right?
Yeah. I was always decent in the beginning, just from kind of modeling everybody else. I was a true student of just following everything else that I saw working and breaking it down and like, okay, here's 5 weight loss offers. Here's what they all have in common. Here's what is different about them. All right. If I'm going to create a weight loss offer, I need these things in it. Okay. Because this is obviously working. So that's kind of the way I learned. And then, yeah, like you mentioned, 2014 or so, I hired David Deutsch to be my copy coach. And that was a game changer for me because I was stuck. I was making good money. I mean, I was making 220 grand a year at that point, but I was stuck there for about 3 years.
And that was selling your own stuff.
Yeah, that was selling my own stuff. And I was writing all of our own copy. But I was stuck. Like, I was a good copywriter, but I wasn't great. And working with David took me just up another 3 notches. I mean, I learned stuff about copy that I never would have. I just was completely blind. Just like everything, you have so many like blind spots as a copywriter, and then you have someone who's better than you pointing it out and showing you what you need to change. Yeah, that's what I mean. My income went from like 200 a year to 700 to like 2.2 million within 3 years, and that's. I mean, that was a good ROI on that coaching investment.
Yeah, for sure. It's better than pretty much anything else you can do. So then from there, you know, now you get a ton of writing done. What are some of your daily productivity and habits and routines that allow you to get a lot of mental work done at the right time of day? And how has that changed over time? And have you ever tried the night owl thing?
Yeah. So I'm actually most productive early AM and then, late into the evening. Okay. Those to be my 2 best. Right now I'm much more of the 2 most important things that I need to do of the day, happen between 7 AM and 9 AM. That's when I write my daily email usually then. And if there's whatever next kind of big important thing has to be done then, I mean, that was something I learned from you. Just getting that magic time in the morning where you really are just way more productive. And for me, mornings work great. Cause like my dog's still sleeping. The house is like quiet. There's not shit going on. There's not Amazon driver knocking on the door, like a lot less distractions than any other time of the day. It's so key though, to find that time. Like I know myself personally, anytime between like 2 and 5 in the afternoon, I'm just worthless. So that's when I'll go to the
podcast. That's when I bring my worthless self to the podcast.
Pretty much what I do. I'll do my calls and I'll take my dog to the park and I'll work out. And then sometimes I'll get back then at 5 or 6, maybe I'll work for another hour. And I'm pretty deadlined on wrapping up by 7 o'clock. Cause I'm pretty, strict about like my sleep and not being on computers and phones late at night.
Yeah. So one thing where you and I are really different is I don't watch TV. You're a big, you know, you're like a, hey, it's not like I'm, hey, don't ever watch TV, but don't watch mindless TV. But you're like, you know, I like watching these shows because I get ideas, I get storylines and stuff like that. What are some of the things that you have watched that if someone wanted to be a great copywriter and they loved watching a little bit of television, what are some of the things that you're like, you know what, this is darn good stuff, and why? What was it, like the OJ thing you watched for a while?
The OJ show was really, really good. The People versus OJ Simpson. The People versus OJ Simpson. It was like a 10-part series. Yeah, that was really good. I mean, deep down, Mad Men is my favorite TV show ever. If you have nostalgia for the advertising world and the old David Ogilvy kind of stuff, to me, I like the depth of the writing, the depth of the characters, stuff like that. But I'm also, though, I watched The Bachelor too. And I watched The Bachelor because this is the first year I actually ever watched it. And I was like one of those dudes who's like, why the hell would I ever watch The Bachelor? It's a girl show. And after 3 hours, I was hooked more than any other show I've ever been hooked. But I've kind of come to the place where I am okay with myself watching something now just for pure entertainment. Whereas before I used to be, okay, I have to learn something from this, or I have to watch a documentary or whatever it is. But now I'm much more in a spot where it's like, okay, if The Bachelor's on, I don't want to waste 2 hours of my life watching The Bachelor. I'm fine with that, which is a good place for me to be because I used to feel guilty about it for a long time.
Have you watched Love is Blind?
No, I haven't. I've heard a lot about it, though.
It's a bizarre show, that is for sure. And I mean, I haven't watched TV in years, and my girlfriend got me on that. And they do hook you in there, especially because it's really, they're not writing the characters, but it's the character that you want to see what happens with this character. We sat there and we were like, I can't believe she said that. And every time I would say that, I'm like, I can't believe I just said that she just said, I can't believe she just said, like, who have I turned into here? And then, have you watched that Tiger guy one?
Yeah. Tiger King.
And that's like, because the character is just so unbelievable.
To me, like that was the equivalent of someone giving you like the most home run offer to write copy for. And it doesn't matter how bad of a copywriter you could be, there's no way you could fuck it up. That's what Tiger King was. It's such an insane story with such insane characters. Like you could have took some kid like fresh out of film school and had him like film that show and it would have been a hit because it's beyond entertaining. Like it's wild. It's just so control. It's all over the place. Yeah, I loved it. I love shit like that, though.
Yeah, I mean, here we are living in something where, I mean, really, could you have made this up? You got a guy like President Trump. You have a disease that shuts down the world. Like this is, we are living a movie right now. And it's you got the prime minister of the UK. I'm not sure what his health status was, but he almost, you know, you could say he almost died from it. You got all this stuff going on, and it's like it's taken like 5 books, you know, 5 of the bestseller books or movies like Contagion, and put it into one. And it's hard to believe, but sometimes when, you know, like the Tiger King guy and this situation, the truth does become stranger than any fiction that we could possibly come up with, I suppose.
That's true.
So then you have written for the pet niche, and I want to talk about how, you know, everybody's listening, we're talking about making money, but you also use copy for charity. And so you've done animal rescues, dog rescue stuff, and you helped an animal rescue, just like actually our mentor, Dan Kennedy, has always been helping a Ohio-based you know, animal shelters, or maybe it's like a horse rescue or something. So how can people who belong to a church, belong to an organization, you know, need to raise money for their schools, or even, you know, want to find the love of their life, how do they use copywriting in what we would call day-to-day stuff where they're not profiting from it in terms of putting money in their own personal bank account?
I mean, the principles are all the same. It really doesn't change at all. So I'll give you an example. Like the dog rescue I wrote for is a Great Dane Rescue in Ohio, where I used to help them out when I lived in Ohio. They're like a super small kind of niche rescue. I mean, it's they need like $18,000 a year to kind of operate, which is a very small amount of money in the rescue world. But like a lot of nonprofits, they're there because like they love dogs and they love saving dogs, but they don't know a damn thing about marketing. So they're one of the ones I stepped in. I just emailed them. I was like, hey, I'm a direct response copywriter. I normally charge $30,000 to do this, but I want to do it for you for free. I'll do everything pro bono. I just want to help you guys raise some money. One of the things I did to make it really easy, I was like, you guys don't have to do anything. All you have to do is collect the checks. So you don't have to send out any of the stuff. You don't have to pay for anything up front. I'll pay for like the printing and all this stuff, and I'll send it out. And then you guys just kind of collect the checks. So I made it super easy for them to say yes, which was a huge part of it, because I've tried to work with other ones in the past, and you get into a lot of like red tape and stuff like that with a lot of charities. I wrote them a simple 8-page fundraising letter that went out at the end of the year last year, went out to previous donors. We basically took their list that had donated previously. Anybody I think who had donated over $100 total, we sent this out to, and they raised, I think, close to $13,000 off that one letter, which for them, they said it was just like game changer. They're not used to getting that much money in at once. You could do the same thing for any cause. I mean, if you were raising money for, your school's volleyball team, you could do the same thing with a short 2-, 4-, 6-page letter sent out to people. And then the big thing is really painting the picture in there of how it benefits the person to donate. If somebody wanted to donate to raise money for the volleyball team, you don't have a kid who plays volleyball, you'd be like, well, why would I want to do that? So you need to figure out a reason that, it actually matters to them. I mean, one of the big things with donations and nonprofits is really, people getting recognition. That's really what they want more than anything. Like one of the dog rescues I've donated to, I've probably given them over $20,000 over the last couple of years, and they go above and beyond because they know deep down that's why kind of people give money. So like they invite me to these dinners and they like recognize me at the dinners and they send me like a plaque and they send me like pictures of the dogs all the time that I've helped, stuff like that. It's brilliant marketing on their part, and it just keeps me engaged and keeps me giving money to them.
Yeah. And if it's the same with charity auctions, right? Like, you know, people paying and bidding against each other, they're not really bidding for the thing in most cases. They can go and buy the thing for the same price somewhere else, but they see the other guy who's the bigger dog and they want to bet against them or bid against them just because they want to be recognized. Recognition, as Napoleon knew many, many years ago, can go a long way. So let's now switch over to something that you used in writing that 8-page sales letter. You had to have a hook, you had to have a really great offer, and you had to have a big idea in all that, but at the same time, keeping it simple, kind of like that chain of belief. You know, we have to keep the argument simple. I think Perry Belcher said you only have one really big argument in your sales letter. Like, you can't try and get somebody to believe 10 different things. They really just need to be here believing one thing. So when you're putting together an offer, whether it's an email or whether it is a big offer like a VSL, you know, the one that you wrote back in the day that worked really well, what is the strategy and structure with which you go about it to find a really great hook, really great offer, and a really great big idea? You know, for example, like I had a coaching call today with somebody. He won a free coaching call with me. He runs a vegan cooking course, and he's competing against all the vegan cooks out there and bloggers that do stuff for free. And his whole shtick was, well, we go and we go to like different countries and then we film a chef, a professional chef from all these countries cooking food from that country. And I go, well, nobody really cares, you know, because if I look at that, I go, well, oh, if I have to be a professional chef in order to make this food, it's not going to be very good. So I'm going to go and find the blogger that I can relate to who made this in their home with ingredients that I can get using equipment that I have. And so I got him to realize like what he thought was a big deal is not a big deal to the person. It's not the hook. It's not the big offer, the big idea. So how do you go about setting your stuff up for success?
So very similar process to what I said, I did with other sales letters. I find other stuff that I know is working. So I have a swipe file that has, I don't know, 7 or 8 nonprofit offers with dog rescues, feeding kids in Africa, feeding elderly people, Meals on Wheels kind of stuff. They're all very, very similar in their structure. The ones that are really good start off with a really kind of heartbreaking story about one person, one dog, one whatever. So I followed the exact same formula that has been proven to work over and over and over again. So you look at some of the bigger nonprofits who get a little more corporate-y and don't do this correctly, their copy is talking about stats. So they're talking about the 1,200 kids that are dying every day in Africa because they don't have food and they're malnourished, and here's your chance to help them. The ones who are really damn good about this tell the story about the one kid, Jaden, who's 6 years old and how she goes to bed every single night with hunger pangs in her stomach, and her mom's feeding her ice chips just to try to fill up her stomach so she can stop crying because they don't have enough money to buy food. That is going to hit you and connect with you on an emotional, on a human level, way more than a bunch of facts and figures about hunger and starvation kind of going on in Africa. So I did that exact same thing with the dog rescue. It was actually a lot of work. They had about 90 stories on their website of dogs that they have saved. And the one they actually wanted me to use was actually pretty boring. And I actually plowed through all 90 stories on their website until I found one that I really, it just hit me. I was like, okay, this is the one by far. And it was just a really heartbreaking story of like this dog who was a normal family dog, had a family and everything. And one day the family just decided they didn't want it anymore and like drove out to the country and like literally just kicked the dog out the car, left it on the side of the road. And I told the story of that and how that dog was just standing there watching his family drive away, and his family that he loved for the last 7 years, drive away, and he's scared and he doesn't know, what to do. And that story just ended up crushing. That's a much more, I mean, I know, I'm sure you as a dog lover, you're like, damn, that's, that's sure. Tough.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, when somebody's putting together offers and stuff like that, what's the power of being contrarian and going the opposite direction? What are some of your favorite contrarian offers that you've come across in the last little bit? I mean, even your Patriot Greens one. I mean, when I heard you were selling greens powder to survival niche, I thought, man, that you can sell that. You can sell anything.
I like using the contrarian hook in a lot of stuff. So it works really, really well in niches that tend to be saturated. So like if we look at our buddy Joel with BioTrust, like they're doing this with a lot on their collagen offer. Everybody, if you're in the health niche, you're getting emails all the time about collagen and how it's the greatest thing. It's the best thing. BioTrust is going the exact opposite way, when it's like avoid collagen, don't make sure you're not eating collagen every day, blah, blah, blah. And then obviously the letter and the email talk about a certain type of collagen, and that's whatever the one that BioTrust is selling and how that's the one you want, not just any old collagen. I'm a huge fan of contrarian stuff because it stands out, because if their whole inbox is talking about why keto is the greatest thing ever, and you're coming in talking about here's why you need to avoid keto and here's what you should do instead, that grabs people's attention and hooks them really, really quick.
We've talked about a couple people that we've studied over the years. You've studied from David Deutsch one-on-one. We obviously all study some great writers and then people from history, and then Dan Kendi as well. going back to your early career, who would you have studied earlier? And what about copywriting would you have studied earlier?
Ooh, interesting. I would actually say the biggest thing that would have changed for me if I would have studied the emotional aspects of copywriting. So I was very good at writing copy and at trying to put the emotion in that I thought was there, but I wasn't like, I was very, very walled off emotionally to myself. So I didn't know what the hell anger felt like or what fear felt like or what shame felt like. And this is a big thing I've actually worked with a lot of younger copywriters on now, since kind of going through this process myself. If you're walled off from your own emotions, because I was like the type of person, if you asked me how I felt, my answer was either good or fine. Like that was the only two things. That was the range of my emotional capacity, was good and fine. And the reality is, if you don't really understand how all the little emotions work, you can't really write good copy that way. You could try like I did. And I was basically at the point where I was just like implementing what I thought fear felt like, or what I thought shame felt like, or what I thought guilt felt like. If you're not in touch with those own emotions though in yourself, you're going to have a really hard time, right? Your copy is just going to come out flat and emotionless. This is actually something Chris Haddad said to me probably back in like 15, 16. He was like, one thing I realized when he's like, your copy is always good, but he's like, it's just so flat emotionally. And I was like, huh, I don't know why that is. And he's like, I don't know. Maybe you're just not like connected to that part of yourself. I didn't really grasp it at the time, but now I kind of see the bigger, broader picture. That actually would be one thing I would change right away, is going back and really, really trying to get more in touch with my own emotions, because until you're able to do that, you're just not gonna be able to write hard-hitting emotional copy.
You have a lot of free stuff on YouTube. Where would people find that?
Man.
Is it YouTube.com? Is it hidden or is it?
No, you can just, if you just search Justin Goff on YouTube, you'd find it.
Stuff. Yeah. Who else would you tell? So somebody is like, well, first of all, talk about who would they study on YouTube? What books would they get? And then if they needed to invest in a course on copy, which, you know, neither of us really did, I don't think, we just read a lot and kind of studied it and then read some articles or something. But what are some resources that if somebody had 3, 4, 5 hours a day for the next couple of months and wanted to go hardcore, where would you tell them to go?
My big thing would be one focus. So my partner, Stefan Georgi, for the people who don't know him, I widely consider him probably the best copywriter in the world right now. I think him and Craig Clemens are neck and neck. But Stefan's RMBC formula, I've just seen it firsthand and watched how we use it to teach people in our Copy Accelerator course. In my opinion, is the best copywriting formula I've ever seen. And I've been through Kennedy's and Carlton's and Clayton Make pieces and all of them, just because the results it produces are really second to none. And I think he's done it in a way that simplifies copy, which, like I said, it's a monster. I mean, trying to write a big sales letter if you don't have any experience writing any other copy is super hard, but he's done the best job that I've seen of simplifying copy so that someone could come in. Like he's hired people off Craigslist who within 7-8 months are writing sales letters that are working on cold traffic, which is shockingly impressive.
That's amazing. Yeah. Stefan's in the 100 million mastermind with me, so I get to hang out with him. Smart, smart dude. All right. Last thing I want to ask you is, you know, you had a big critic in your mom. You write about that a lot. A lot of people are going to have critics, first of all, of their copy, but second of all, just of their decision to try something called copywriting. What is that? You're sitting at home in your t-shirt and underwear and you think that you're making money. How could you possibly do this? Time for you to go back to work. What do we say and how do we deal with the critics that people will have to deal with?
I mean, the first step is really just being aware of who they are. And it is kind of shocking because I don't know if you dealt with this, but like the people closest to me, like my mom, were the most critical for me when I was starting out. And a lot of that, I mean, the more older I've gotten, the more I've kind of realized where that comes from. It's all her shit. It's not really had nothing to do with me. But that's the sad part, because it's not coming from people that don't care about you. It tends to be like your friends or your parents or your spouse. You see that over and over again. I think a lot of it boils down to you do need to get some wins quickly. That's one of the reasons I'm such a huge advocate of, let's say you're learning copy and starting small and you're just starting with those emails. And let's say maybe you're writing emails for 2 months, 3 months, and then you land a client, even if it's just a client who's like, all right, I'm gonna pay you $1,000 to write 4 emails. That's a win.
It's like selling your first ebook.
Yeah, it changes everything. I mean, everybody, I'm sure you probably remember the day you sold your first ebook and got
January 28th, 2001. There's a Word document I sold through PayPal. No pictures, nothing. A literal Word document.
Nice. Nice. Yeah. I remember the day I made my first dollar online. I was in college and I was at my parents' house, and I remember where I was up in their computer room and I jumped up so high, I almost hit my head on the ceiling. I was like running around screaming.
What are you excited about these days?
What am I excited about? I'm working on a couple new offers that I'm putting out. Because right now all I offer is my Copy Accelerator group, which is $30,000 a year. So it's not obviously accessible to everyone. Working on some, like a newsletter that I'm going to start doing, a print newsletter that goes out every month. And then have another one that I'm kind of working on that might be a swipe file kind of business, but we will see, kind of in the early stages of exploring that one.
Awesome. All right. So Justin, right now, how can people get on your free daily email newsletter?
Yeah, man. So I actually have a URL set up. If you just go to justin123.com, that goes right to the Google form, which is where you can apply to get on the list. And I actually check it out every day and approve people for that email list. So you'll start getting emails like I think the next day if you get approved.
Yeah, because you got to be approved, because it's legitimately medium to advanced stuff almost every day. And, you know, some people don't belong on it, and some people, but the people who do get it accepted will get a ton of value from it. So, sir, thank you so much for your time again.
Yeah, no problem, man.
All right. Another amazing episode. Justin is awesome. Again, episode 123, if you want to hear from him the first time. He's a huge fan of the Perfect Day Formula. So make sure you get your copy of the Perfect Day Formula and the Perfect Week Formula at perfectweekformula.com. And then get the big old orange kit as the upsell. That thing is a game changer. And let me know what you thought of today's show. Okay. So hit me up on Instagram at Real Craig Valentine and on email at support@earlytorise.com. Then give us a 5-star rating over on iTunes. Really appreciate you there. And then listen, if you're like Justin and you're like me and you want to get to the top, you hire a mentor. If you need help from me in growing your business, go to craigvalentine.com and apply to work with me. I can't wait to work with you soon. All right. We'll talk to you later and we'll have Justin back on the show soon. The next episode is going to help you make more money and get more done as well.